Just kick a little something for them cars that be bumping.
Yeah, right, but we need a beat that they can front to. Oh, that works. Be funky. You know what I'm saying?
Hello, greetings and hi. This is the Head Speaks Podcast, a proud member of the Headcast Network. I am your host, Aaron Moss, also known as Head. Welcome to Head Speaks, where I'll be talking about comics, movies, and basically anything geeky. Without further preamble, let's get the show started.
12 o'clock at night with your windows down. Headlights breaking because your battery's drained. Armor roll on your tires and a big gold chain.
And here we are, the 25th episode of Head Speaks. Thanks for sticking with me, guys. And if you're new, well, thanks for joining the show. First up, I'm going to start a new segment on here. Well, it's not a new segment. It's part of an ongoing segment. For What's in Head's Long Box, for the next little while, we're going to look at the Atom. I'm going to start looking at Sword of the Atom, the four-issue miniseries, and there's three specials. And then I'll move on to the Power of the Atom. And eventually, this is going to tie into my Task Force X, I guess. So go ahead and hang with me, and let's get going.
Faster than a speeding bullet.
In the Great Hall of the Justice League.
Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
The Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is
What's in Head Long Box.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind. The world's greatest super friends.
Superhero scientist Ray Palmer, trapped at 6 inches tall in the Amazon rainforest. The Sword of the Atom.
That's right. This is the Sword of the Atom number one. Published by, of course, DC Comics. The cover date was September of 1983, but to buy this off the newsstand, you had to be around on June the 23rd of 1983 with 60 cents in your pocket. The editor was Dick Giordano. The title of this story was called Stormy Passage. The writer was Jan Strand, artist Gil Kane, letterer John Costanza, colorist Thomas J. Zucco. And this was reprinted in the Sword of the Atom trade paperback from 2007. Let's start off our synopsis. We start off the issue looking at a recap of Ray Palmer's origin. He was a scientist, finds a piece of white dwarf star, he uses it to become a superhero named the Atom, falls in love, and marries Jean Loring. Our actual story starts off with Ray getting a phone call on a rainy night for his wife, who happens to be working late at the office. Looking outside, he thinks he sees headlights. Going to investigate, he finds a car parked in the driveway. And in the car, he finds his wife and her new law partner, lips locked together. Jean follows Ray to the house, where they have a fight about her affair and Ray's jobs. Ray decides that they need to spend some time apart, and flies off to South America to look for some more of the white dwarf star that originally gave him his powers. As Ray closes into the area where he detects the material, the pilot decides that they are getting too close to their cocaine fields and tries to fly away. When Ray insists they fly closer, the co-pilot knocks them out and steals Ray's ring. As they get ready to throw him out, Ray awakens, shrinks down, and beats up the co-pilot, causing him to accidentally shoot his partner. As the plane flies out of control, struck by lightning, knocking Adam out. Ray awakens to find he's confronted by a giant snake. Ray realizes that the snake isn't a giant, but his controls are shorted out and he's stuck at six inches tall, or 6 inches short as the case might be. As Ray fights off the snake, it's suddenly shot dead by poisoned, tiny arrows. Ray is then captured by an army of barbarian soldiers who speaks another language that Ray doesn't understand. Him and some other captives are led to the city of Wolida, where he meets their king. The king and one of the captives named Terran, have some words, but we find out that Terran is in love with the king's daughter, so the old man had him freed, in quotes, aka banished. As the guards beat Terran down, Ray decides that he should be helping the man and joins the battle. Soon, the guards overwhelm the two and only stop from killing them when the princess asks her dad to make them stop. The two men are thrown into the dungeons where they encounter a bunch of rats. Meanwhile, back in Ivytown, Jean gets a phone call informing her that they found her husband's charred corpse, which they're able to identify by the ring found on his finger. To be continued. And now for my thoughts. Again, this is the Sword of the Atom miniseries. This was a four-issue miniseries that took Ray Palmer and basically took him out of the DC Universe. And we didn't talk about the DC Universe. We took him out of the primary universe where he was hanging out at. And they moved him to the jungles and made him more of an action hero, more of a sword buckling, you know, bashing Conan-type character, if you will. I didn't read this when the issues first came out. I didn't come on this until later on. I mean, I knew of the Atom. I liked the Atom. But again, as I said elsewhere, I didn't really get into reading comics until 86, 87. I guess it was 87. So I picked this up later on. I went back and I picked up the issues. I found, I think it was the Sword of the Atom Special 3, I think I found on the newsstand. But this miniseries and the first couple of specials, I had to go and find his back issues. So let's go ahead and get my thoughts on the actual issue. We're going to start with the cover. The cover shows Ray Palmer in his newer costume, riding a frog, battling a snake. He's got a sword and a shield. Just so you know, this actual image does not appear in this book. Ray doesn't have his costume yet, and he's not the swashbuckling hero yet. But aside from that, looking at this cover, I think it's a very interesting cover. I think, again, I bought this later on because I like the Atoms. I bought it no matter what. I'm thinking that if I was in the comics in 83 when this came out, I think it's 83. Yeah, if I was in the comics in 83 when this came out, I think I would have picked this up. It's a different cover. It's not, you know, if you're used to the Atom, you're used to him being a superhero, shrinking down, fighting guys like the Cronus and other bad guys. Fought Dr. Light and some other ones. So this is a very different take on the Atom. I'm liking it so far. It's a Gil Kane cover. And also down here that's got a blurb. It would also be where the, if you bought this like on the newsstand, the UPC scanner is. It says the new DC, there's no stopping us now. And from this cover, you can kind of tell it's a new DC universe, if you will, or new DC. Because this isn't a superhero comic, if you will, even though it's a superhero character. And again, the Sword of the Atom logo, it says the Sword of the Atom. Of the is in the Atom symbol, and then between it, it has a sword showing the new direction for the Atom. Again, overall, I really like this cover. What else can I say about it? It's a great cover. I'll have this on the blog. Take a look at it. See what you think. And moving in, I don't normally... When I do my reviews on any of my shows, I normally don't talk about the ads. I'm going to mention this first one I see here, which is Burger Time. The only reason I mention this is because my grandmother used to have it in television, and she played Burger Time all the time. She loved that game. And again, there's just a little personal... This ad brings back to me a little personal memory. My grandmother, my mother's mother... She used to love playing Burger Time. When she played Burger Time, she'd get moving. She'd be moving all over the place, jerking the controller around like that's actually going to help her. I would laugh at her. Grandma, that's not going to help you any. But again, that's just a little ad for Burger Time made me think of my grandmother. So we start with the story. The first page of this, the Sword of the Atom. Again, as I said, the first page of this is actually just a spin-up page. It shows Ray Palmer the Atom in his new costume we're going to see later on a frog. Behind him, we see a bigger version of Ray as the Atom. And then up behind that, we see a headshot of the Atom in his old mask. I like the Atom's costume. I like his old mask, his old look. But I also like this new look they had for this that started here. Here, he went the Kid Flash route. And the top of his mask is gone. So his hair's hanging free. I think that's an interesting look. Before he had a full mask that covered his head, or cowl, I guess, and left just his nose and mouth open and jaw, bottom jaw. Here, I say the top part of his mask was ripped off. We'll find out here in a few minutes. And so he adopted his new costume. He took that look. So, again, it's a nice page. Gil Kane doing the art on it. Gil Kane was one of those, either you love him or hate him for the most part. I tend to like Gil Kane for the most part. Sometimes, I mean, you can kind of tell Gil Kane artwork. In fact, I think it was over on my Task Force X podcast here a couple months ago. I reviewed a issue of Checkmate, had a cover by Gil Kane. Or was it the interior? I forget now. Maybe the interior, actually. Whichever it was, but I could tell what it was when I looked. I could tell it was Gil Kane art just by looking at it, because his art has a distinctive style. He's very heavily inked, and his characters have a certain look about him. It's hard for me to describe. And we go to the first page, which is just a recap. It's page two, actually. It's a recap. It shows, you know, Gray Palmer. It shows the White Dwarf. It shows the Atom shrinking down. It shows him standing on Jean Loring's hand. And Jean Loring looks like she was in an accident or something. Her dress is all torn up. The bottom part is all in tatters. And the neckline is looks like it's been destroyed. And Jean Loring, again, I haven't read a lot of these early issues, but from what a guy I know, I don't know him, but I've heard of his podcast, Diablo Frank, writes into some of the other podcasts I listen to. He's got his own shows. And he's got one where he covers these old Atom issues. And the way he describes Jean Loring, she's a bit of a bit. So, again, I don't know if personally, because I didn't read a lot of these old stories. I've got some of them I need to read, but yeah, so we got Jean Loring. She's looking attractive from what we can tell. Not the greatest drawing of Jean, but not bad. But moving on to the issue itself. So our story starts out, as I talked about earlier, we see an outside shot of Jean Ray's house. It's raining. Again, the artwork in this, it's average Gil Kane work. I like it for the most part, so... But we go along, and nothing really happens at first. He gets a phone call. Ray thinks that Jean's been off a lot of time at the office, and that's getting late. She should be home by now. And he's thinking about how he normally spends a lot of time at the office himself in the lab, so she, you know, she may not be hurrying home because, you know, he's always telling her, well, I'll be home early, and never is. But he's looking out the window, and he sees a car parked out in the driveway. They got like a long driveway. So he walks out and puts his coat on and walks out to the driveway, and in the front seat, he sees two people, you know, snuggling up close. And we get a... fifth page here, we get an extreme close-up of Jean and her partner, find out later, his name's Paul, smooching. And there's a great... So there's three panels here at the top of this page five. We see Jean and Paul smooching. And then we get a close-up of Ray's face and shores. Rain hits him. He's saying, Jean! And then the next panel is Jean pulling back in a horror. She realizes that her husband has caught her cheating with another man. And she's like, let me go. He's seen us. I knew this would happen. As Ray storms off. And Jean says, it's over, Paul. I forget it ever happened. Over? And Paul, her partner, says, but it's only just begun. Jean, don't go. So she storms off and talks to Ray. I read this back. I think I got it like an 88, I want to say, is when I picked up this issue and read it. So I was 18 when I read this first, or thereabouts. And this first couple pages here where Ray goes out in the rain and finds his wife smooching with another guy in the car, the rain beating down the car. It rains ever since I read this, not every time, but a lot of times after it rains, or when it's raining, I think about this scene. To me, I don't know, maybe it's just me, maybe it's my own screwed up head, but whenever it's raining a lot of times, I'll think about this scene, and, you know, and I'll be like, you know, poor Ray Palmer. I know he's a fictional character, but that's how well this scene is written and drawn. that even here it is, you know, 20, 30 years later, and I still think about Ray catching Gene smooching with Paul in the car while it's pouring rain out. So again, this first four or five pages here is really great drama. I mean, Ray goes out and, like I say, he finds his wife smooching with her new law partner. And me, who's not involved with actual characters, you know, it didn't actually happen to me, but I feel for Ray, and I don't know, this scene always comes to mind when it's Ray, especially when I see a car out in the rain. A lot of times this scene just gets brought to my memory. So it's a very moving scene, in my opinion. It's very great. It's again, it tells everything we need to see in just a couple panels here, a couple pages. So kudos to both, I would say both to the artist and writer, to both Jan Strand and Gil Kane. They both did a fantastic job on this, in my opinion. Because again, years later, I still envision the scene. I haven't read this book in years, but yeah, whenever it rains, I see a car sitting in the rain, I think about, you know, this scene. But moving on from there, we get inside the house, we're having a fight, and basically they're arguing, you know, Gene pulls out the usual, "Ray, please, it isn't what you think." And Ray's like, "It's exactly what I think. How could you do this to us? All that blather about working late, and I swallowed it. I feel like a fool. I even believed you about hiring a partner to take some of the load off, so we spend more time together. When did you mention that? 6 months ago? You planning this long?" "Yeah, I see now why you're a successful attorney. You have a shrewd, meticulous mind, dear." And Gene fires back that, you know, Ray doesn't have time for her. And whenever they are together, all he talks about is his atom cases and also atomic, because he's an atomic scientist. So all he talks about is his work, his lab, and also his life as Ray, as the atom, the superhero stuff. And she makes a comment that when they close, she closed the big case. Now a little extra cash to spend. She went by a little cabin in the woods, and he bought the money. He used the money to buy a portable scotillion detector, which he needed to use to solve his important case of the atom. And like I say, you know, she brings up, you know, well, yeah, speaking of which, you know, the atom's interfering with our life. You're not in the lab. You're not playing superhero. And Ray's like, "The world needs the atom. I thought you accepted that when we got married." And Gene's like, "Oh, Ray, grow up. I stopped reading comic books years ago. What makes you think I want to live with one?" And Ray's like, "I see." So Gene's in bed, and Ray's saying, you know, that we've got too used to one another. Maybe we need to spend some time apart. There's a project he wants to work on in South America. He'll be gone about 6 weeks or so, and maybe this might be good for him. And Gene doesn't answer. She just cries. Make a little comment here on these pages here. On page 7, this kind of furthers what Diablo Frank says about Gene Laurie being a bit, as Ray says here. I mean, when they got married, she knew he was the Atom. She's known he was the Atom for years. So it's not like, you know, he was the Atom, they got married, and then years later she found out that he had a secret identity. She knew about this going in. So, and to me, that's kind of BS that, you know, she knew going in that he was the Atom. She knew he devoted his life to working in his lab and fighting crime. And yes, if you're married, you need to spend time with your partner. You make time to spend with your wife and or husband. But on the other hand, if you go into a marriage knowing that your spouse has these extracurricular activities, knowing that your spouse can't spend all the time you would like with you because of reasons, and then, you know, cheat on him later on saying, "Well, you don't have time for me. You're always busy doing this." Well, yeah, well, when I was doing this before we even got together, that's who I am. I am the Atom. So again, this kind of just, no matter what you may think about Gene Loring before this, to me anyways, this definitely, she's a grade A witch here. And yeah, maybe I'm wrong, maybe because I'm coming from it from a guy, a superhero fan point of view. But to me, it's really wrong of Gene to be cheating on Ray, and I can understand her working late because he's always working late. And yes, she may feel neglected, but again, it's not a surprise. He was the Atom before they got married. She knew it was the Atom. So to turn around and say, well, you know, you're spending all this time as the Atom. And he's like, well, you knew that. You accept that. I thought you accept that we got married. Well, grow up. I stopped reading comic books years ago. What makes you want to live in one? The fact, well, answer that question, you idiots. The fact that, you know, when you say, what makes you want to live in one? The fact that you knew he was the Atom, you knew he was a superhero. I remember the Justice League of America, and you said yes when he asked you to marry him. To me, that says that you want to live that life and you don't mind it. So you can't come back and throw us in his face years later and say, you know, it's your fault. Again, a little bit about my background. I am divorced. I'm not a superhero. I wasn't, you know, that wasn't part of the problem. In my case, my wife turned out to be a psycho, but that's another story entirely. So I may be reading some of the fact that I'm divorced into this also. So let's go ahead and move away from there and move off the story itself. So as I said, when Ray tells her that, you know, maybe it's best if I go to South America, that's where it's at, for 6 weeks or so. She's laying there and she's got a tear in her eye. Seems like she wants to say something, but I don't know if it's either A, the guilt of what she did, or just part of her is ready for him to leave. I don't know. I'm leaning more towards the guilt of her cheating on Ray is causing her not to say something. And, you know, maybe she had, they could still be together. But that's another story for another time. So we move on with the story. And again, when at the bottom of page 8, Ray comes running up to the airfield. And before he gets there, we see these two South American guys talking about how there's more profitable ways to use an airplane than hauling a scientist over the jungle. And apparently there's something in the cocoa fields that they don't want him to see, which we'll find out here in a little bit. And again, he's telling that he's looking for a piece of pure white dwarf star material. And he's used a Cetylian detector, which him and his wife just fought about two pages ago. So as they're flying over the fields, the jungles, Ray's wanting to go lower so he can find it, and the pilots tell him that the weather reports are very bad. He's turning back, and Ray's starting to get insistent to keep going, but they're almost there. And Ray said, I almost have the coordinates, if we could just get closer. And then his partner, the bald drug runner, if you will, whatever he is, knocks Ray out and tells him, you know, any near you discovered our secrets. Besides, for the story itself, I mean, he didn't need to knock him out. I mean, they're in control. It's not like Ray could have forced him to go any further. Using the weather excuse, they could have turned back and flew back home. So I think knocking Ray out was a bit extreme. And they're going to talk about throwing him overboard. Once they get away from the cocoa field, they'll toss his body out. And I understand they did it for the story purposes. I don't know, maybe there may have been a better way of doing it. Again, it's not bad storytelling. It's just a little questionable. And then the guy takes Ray's ring, which you just know is going to come back later. Well, you know because I told you, but any good story, that's going to come back later since he's stealing Ray's ring. But Ray's not quite knocked out. He overhears him talk about Coco, which he knows comes from cocaine. He bets two and two together and gets four. Actually, he bets two and A together and gets four. And he shrinks down to the Atom, which is great. I love here on page 11, top panel, we've got Ray in his Ray Palmer identity, the Atom, the nuclear symbol, whatever nuclear symbol going around him as he shrinks down on the bottom of the page. Great panel. I love seeing the Atom shrink down and going into battle. He jumps up, and again, as he does, he shrinks almost nothing, and then as he gets up next to the guy, he puts all his weight into a punch and knocks the guy down. He gives him a couple punches, and the point of the punch makes the second bad guy that tried to kill Ray accidentally shoot his partner who's piloting. The plane starts plummeting, cargo doors open, everything goes flying out, Ray's hanging onto the edge, gets zapped by lightning. And here on the bottom of page 13, we see Ray as he's being hit by lightning. Ray's all one color, the lightning surrounding him, just the smoke as he goes falling from the sky. And then he wakes up at the bottom of the page here, 14. And we see a costume that looks similar to what's on the cover. It's a regular Atom costume, but the top of his mask is torn off, revealing his hair. And he goes walking through the jungle. You see what he thinks is a giant snake. And suddenly he realizes that this snake's not a giant. As I mentioned in the synopsis, his size control belt was short-circuited by the lightning, and he's stuck at like six inches tall. And so he's jumping around the snake when suddenly the snake gets riddled full of arrows, and he finds a bunch of little yellow people. That's about his height. One of them riding a frog. They've got swords, very primitive. And he leads them back to their outpost. And again, they're speaking a different language, so Ray doesn't understand them. But they give us captioning, so we understand what's going on. And we find out one of the guys is thinking that, you know, the girl that's here, we find out later, is a princess. She's thinking, that, you know, is he a fool? Because the way he's dressed. And the guy that's not walking next to her, which we find out here in a few minutes, is named Taren. He says, you know, a fool? Welcome then. We're all fools who oppose Kalish and his bondsmen for whatever reason. And Taren's looking over at the girl. And Ray, again, doesn't know what's going on, but he can tell from the way that the guy's looking at the woman riding a frog that there's something between those two. And Taren looks over at Ray and he sees that Ray can tell there's something going on between him and Princess Lathan. And he thinks, you're no fool. If not a fool, what are you? A stranger, certainly, but from what tribe? Who commands your loyalty? Or does anyone? It's like that we're getting what's going on without these two speaking the same language. They kind of understand what the other's thinking just by their body language. As we said, the girl that first, you know, that's with him is a princess. And this guy, Taren, I don't think we've got his name yet, but Taren here has a thing for her. He's in love with her. As we find out, as we get to the city, as I said earlier, they arrive in the city of Mordalai, which is a giant. Well, I say a giant. You guys are 6 inches tall, so it probably looks like a playset to us. But for Ray, it's a giant city. And the king's sitting there on the throne with his daughter sitting behind him, sitting down on by his feet, much like you expect in a sort of fantasy-type story. The king is telling us that, you know, they gave Taren his freedom, but he speaks out against them. He organizes rebels to dethrone him. And we find out that apparently that he was a bondsman to Kalish. They were friends. He was a bondsman. Until he asked his daughter, the princess, to marry him. And at that point, he freed him, in quotes, and sent him out to the jungle to die. And basically, Taren wants... This city lives in our monarchy, and Taren wants more of a democracy. They want to be able to vote and choose their own king. And so the king tells one of his men, you know, silence Taren, so they start beating on him. The princess gets up, trying to make him stop. Ray right next to him, again, doesn't know what's going on, doesn't speak the language, but no matter where he's at, Ray's going to do the right thing, and he jumps in and starts attacking these guys himself, helping out this unknown prisoner. Just because it's 3-1, Ray knows it's not fair odds. So doing what he does, whether he's a superhero fighting crime or just a man stuck at 6 inches tall, he fights on the side of Ray. He jumps in and he starts getting beat himself when other guards show up. And again, the princess gets her father, the king, to make him stop. And they throw the two men into a dungeon where they find themselves with a swarm of rats coming at them. And again, a swarm of rats may be scary to most people, but when you're 6 inches tall, that's just horrendous. And again, commenting on advertisements, as I said, I normally don't do on these shows. Right after page 21, there's an ad for Vigilante. That was a comic I covered here a while back on Head Speaks. And again, I like this page. It looks like a page out of the newspaper. It talks about the president being shot. Probably when Reagan was, because it talks about how he was listed in stable condition. He captured his attempted assassin was captured by the Secret Service. And there's others, you know, a survivor murdered home by intruder. Motel student killed for radio. Bullying landlord throws wife from 6th floor window. Head severed in subway attack. Terror stalks the subway. Just a newspaper full of depressing bad stories. And on the far side, we've got the picture of the vigilante. At the top, it says, "When the law is not enough, my justice begins." Vigilante by Marv Wolfman and Keith Pollard. And again, as I've talked about, I'm going to talk about it briefly here. I didn't get the series when it first came out. I wasn't aware of Vigilante. A guy I was friends with at the time, when I got into comics, he showed me some of his issues. And so I ended up going out and buying the entire run. It was a great series. It started by Marv Wolfman. Later on, it was picked up by Paul Kupperberg, who I talked with. And we talked a little about Vigilante over on my Task Force X headcast. I think it was a year ago. I think it was for my 12th episode, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I talked to Paul Kupperberg. Great guy. Enjoyed talking with him. Definitely check out my Task Force X podcast. That's another story entirely. Let's get back on to this story. So we got Rafe and Terran handcuffed with a bunch of rats coming out after them. And the series ends with Jean Lauren getting a phone call at home. And she's saying, no, I can't believe it. What proof? And we get the voice from the other end of the line saying the bodies were burned beyond recognition. But there was a ring on one of the fingers, and it said to Ray, "All my love forever, Jean." And Jean's about ready to drop the phones. Dots are swirling around her head. She's about ready to pass out. And she leaves the phone hanging there. She wanders away, and the voice on the other end is like, "Hello, are you there, Miss Lorraine?" So as I said, the guy taking the ring will come back up later. So apparently the plane crashed. They found the body. And being burned up, they don't know who it is, but they had the ring with Ray's name inscribed onto it. So, and that's part of the story reason why they included that. Again, there may have been a better way than what they did, but it played out well in the end. And we end the issue with an action pinup number one. We show Ray with Princess Lotha, whatever her name is, on a frog. The frog's jumping to some trees, and there's a snake that Ray's about to swipe its head off of. With the power of the atom. I'm sorry, the sword of the atom logo on the top. Great picture. And the next page here, again, another ad I'm just going to mention real quick. It's for Olympic. They sold, if I'm not mistaken, it was greeting cards and stuff. Yeah, all occasion cards and gifts. Back when I was younger, I did Olympic. I mentioned that because. Online buddy of mine I met online named Pat Sampson. He's got his own show, Long Box Crusade, I believe it is, where he looks at all his comics in order. He talked about one of these ads for Olympic in the back of his, one of his comics had mentioned Olympic, and he was wondering if anyone did that. I saw you right talking about that too, but so it made me think, I did Olympic a couple of times, and I forget what I bought now. I got a few things, I say bought, which you sold cards, greeting cards, and things like that. And you could earn prizes. You either get money for it, or you could get some of these prizes. It had a lot of cool things there. A little portable TV, a home computer, and so forth. Again, I forget what I ended up... I forgot what I got. I think I got a magic set. I forget what I got through it. There's a Dungeons & Dragons adventure game on here, which is really cool. A tent, telescope. That's some interesting things on here. But anyways... And then the last ad here. Again, I don't normally mention ads, but I am this time really much. Huh, it's odd. The last ad, the last page of this is for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, a video game for the Intellivision gaming system. I used to have the Intellivision game system. I used to have this game on it. Back at the, like I said, looking at the graphics on the picture here, it's junk graphics at this point in 2016. But back when I had this in the mid-80s, 83, 84, 85, somewhere in there, it was great graphics for the time. It was a great game. I love that. But anyway, that's going to end this issue of Sword of the Atom. Let me know what you guys think. Go ahead and write into Head at headspeaks.com. And again, for the next, year or two, we're going to be following the adventures of Ray Palmer as he goes to the Sword of the Atom, and then his next series called Power of the Atom, which eventually ties into my Task Force X podcast. That's enough for that. Let's go and end this part.
Superhero scientist Ray Palmer, trapped at 6 inches tall in the Amazon rainforest, the Sword of the Atom.
Head Speaks will be back after these important messages.
Yo, Joe! trouble. G.I. Joe is there.
G.I. Joe, American hero. G.I. Joe is there.
It's G.I. Joe against Cobra and Destro, fighting to save the day. He never gives up. He's always there, fighting for freedom over land and air.
G.I. Joe, American hero. G.I. Joe is there.
Attention, Joes. This is General Hawk. I have an important mission for you. I need you to listen to G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast. It's a monthly podcast where Aaron Moss, codename Head, and two other Joes, Ryan Daly and Kyle Benning, will be reporting on the comic book G.I. Joe, a Real American Hero. Previously published by Marvel, currently being published by IDW Comics. We'll also cover the special missions, the yearbooks, order battles, etc. To hear their message, report to G.I. Joe. Headspeaks.com or iTunes or Stitcher Radio. You can get further information at Facebook, Google Plus, and Twitter. All under G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast. Dismissed.
Now we know!
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast, is a proud member of the Headcast family.
The world. He never gives up. He'll stay till the fight's won. G.I. Joe will dare.
G.I. Joe. G.I. Joe.
Hello, everyone. My name is Pat, and I'm the host of a new podcast called The Long Box Crusade. A while back, my wife said to me, "Why do you keep buying more comics? I bet you have not even read all the comics you have already." Well, she's right. But let's keep that between you and me. So I took her up on the challenge to read them all. I decided to read my collection of comic books in chronological order by the issue's cover dates. I wanted to relive their adventures and bring back the memories I had of my childhood in the late 70s, 80s, 90s, and beyond. My collection has been stashed away in over 20 plus long boxes in the basement. I'll leave it up to your imagination as to why I cannot have them on display upstairs. But that's a different story. The Long Box Crusade podcast will be of recaps and reviews of the issues in my collection in a fun and friendly way. You can find the podcast at longboxcrusade.com. I hope you will join me on this crusade to read them all.
November 4th, 1988. Earth is invaded by an alien alliance composed of several species, including the Dominators, the Kuns, the Denegarians, and the Durlans. And they want our superheroes. Even though Australia has been decimated, the United Nations response is unequivocal. Drop dead. First Strike, the Invasion podcast, takes you back to that moment in time and covers the entire Invasion DC Comics crossover. Issue by issue, tie-in by tie-in, join Bass and Siskoid at fireandwaterpodcast.com or on iTunes. First Strike, the Invasion podcast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Remember number.
And now back to Head Speaks.
Get set. We're riding on the internet.
The internet is really, really great.
For porn.
I got a fast connection so I don't have to wait.
For porn. What?
There's always some new site.
For porn.
I browse all day and night.
For porn.
It's like I'm surfing at the speed of light.
For porn.
Internet porn, Roman orgy scenes. Internet porn, dominatrix queens. Internet porn, girl on girl on girl on girl on girl on guy on sheep.
I bet you're going surfing on the internet.
Where is Head going?
On today's Where's Head Going? Well, if you've been listening to my previous previews I just played, you might figure it out. Yes, I'm referring to the First Strike, the Invasion podcast by Siskoid and Baz. This covers the 1989 crossover series from DC Comics. It was called Invasion. It was a three-issue miniseries that crossed over most of the DC and Marvel books. I myself am going to be talking about this briefly over on both my Task Force X podcast, because it crossed over with Checkmate briefly, and then over on my Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour, both of those books crossed over, so I'll be talking about that here in a few months. But again, I'm just going to talk about the main series and the issues that crossed over with Starman and Manhunter, and one or two issues of the other comics that touched upon, like The Flash, and I think an issue of Justice League America. But if you want full coverage of the entire run, check out the First Strike, the Invasion podcast, where, again, Siskoid and Abaz, each episode, they look at one book from the crossover. They look at the Invasion series itself. They're looking at the supplements. There was a Daily Planet supplement they looked at. And they're going to look at each issue of the crossovers that came out. So I've listened to everything they've got out so far. I think I may be one episode behind, maybe two. But it's a good podcast so far. Siskoid and Abaz is a couple of Canadians. It's into comics. And like I said, I can't really say much more about it than, you know, check out First Strike, the Invasion podcast. I'm enjoying the podcast. And like I say, it's a limited podcast, but it's going to run at least, it's probably be 70 or 80 issues, episodes, I'd imagine. Because again, there was only the three issues of the main series, but the books it ran across, like I said, it was almost every book in the DC universe, it seems like. So definitely go check out their podcast. Write in, let them know what you think. They are a part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, which I've mentioned on here before in my other podcasts. But that's all I'm going to say about it. Go check out First Strike, the Invasion podcast. Now, let's go ahead and move on to...
Mail time!
Mail time!
Mail time!
Mail time!
The mail's here!
Here's the mail, it never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
You've got mail.
As usual, I have no email coming in. So we're going to go ahead and take a look at the Twitters. This is people that liked, retweeted, or commented on any of my tweets under my HitCast network. If I could easily tell that it was for the G.I. Joe or Starman or Task Force, one of my other podcasts, I'm going to do it over there. These are the ones that are more generic or I didn't get time to look into further. So it's going to get started. We have Cash Flag, Chris Williams, David Bayer Jr., the DC Movie Page, Ferocious Fact Fractures, the Fire and Water Podcast Network, FKA Jason, Greg A., The Hammer Strikes, Hicks, Jeffrey Brown, the JLI Podcast, Kevin, Cal Swivel, Lodix, Mark Garvey, Michael Bailey, Mike Gillis, Neil Zaz, Paul Owls, Richie O'Hare Berrien, The Rolled Spine, Ryan Daly, Sean Faulkner, Stephen McGowan, Trekker Talk, Two True Freaks, Warlord World, Willie Yarborough, and Xenox Xenophiles. Hope I didn't mess that one up. And people that are following us now on the HeadCast Network is Comic Reflections, our buddies over at the Film and Water Podcast, Mannix, Randy Caldwell, Steve Rogers, my buddy the Irredeemable Shag, and the Phantom. Moving over to the Facebook, that's a bit short of a list. We have Comic Book Fight Club, which is by my buddies Gene Hendricks and Adam Worth. Speaking of which, there's also Gene Hendricks, Pat Sampson, Ryan Daly, The Hammer Strikes, The Quantum Cast, and The Secret Origins Podcast. Those are all people that liked or commented or favored us on Facebook. And you know what? That's it. That's all for the mailbag. If you guys want to, you can either, again, look us up on the blog, you go to Facebook or Google Plus, and look for us under Head Speaks, under both of those. You can also go to Twitter and look for the HeadCast Network. Be sure to leave us a comment. You can email us at head@headspeaks.com, and I'll read your message on the air. If you want to send us an MP3 file, I can play that also. You can send that to head at headspeaks.com. But I guess that's going to be it for this time. Go ahead and stay tuned. I'm going to play the credits like I normally do, and then I will pick a song. You know what? I haven't decided what song yet. It'll be a surprise to me and you. So sit back and enjoy the credits, and enjoy my after-show song. Until next time, remember, head has spoken. Thank you for listening to another fantastic episode of Head Speaks. Hope you enjoyed it. If so, let me know. Drop me an email to head@headspeaks.com or visit our home at head.headspeaks.com. You can also visit and talk with me on Facebook and Google+, both under Head Speaks. You can also send an MP3 file with your thoughts and I can play that on the air. And you can also get more of me on my other podcasts. Be sure to listen to Task Force X, where monthly I look at John Ossinger's Suicide Squad and Paul Kupperberg's Checkmate comics from the 80s and early 90s. Also, over on G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast, my podcasting friends Ryan Daly and Kyle Benning, along with myself, are looking at all of the G.I. Joe, a Real American Hero comics, and related titles from Marvel and IDW. All of my headcasts are available on iTunes and Stitcher, along with the respective blogs and my main page at headspeaks.com. All comments, thoughts, and opinions expressed on Head Speaks are owned wholly by the speaker of said comments and do not express the opinions of Head Speaks, unless, of course, I'm the one making the comments. Head Speaks, Task Force X, and G.I. Joe, Real American Headcast, are all part of the Headcast family. So join us next month for another wonderful episode of Head Speaks. Until then, I'll see you in the funny pages. Good night.
A little song I wrote, you might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Ain't got no place to lay your head. Somebody came and took your bed. Don't worry, be happy. The landlord say your rent is late. He may have to litigate. Don't worry, be happy.
Look at me, I'm happy. Don't worry, be happy. I give you my phone number. When you worry, call me. I make you happy.
Don't worry, be happy. Ain't got no cash, ain't got no style, ain't got no gal to make you smile, but don't worry, be happy. Cause when you worry, your face will frown, and that will bring everybody down. So don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Now there is this song I wrote. I hope you learned it note for note like good little children. Don't worry, be happy. Listen to what I say. In your life, expect some trouble, but when you worry, you make it double. But don't worry, be happy. Be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, don't worry, don't do it. Be happy. Put a smile on your face. Don't bring everybody down like this. Don't worry, it will soon pass, whatever it is. Don't worry, be happy. I'm not worried.